Please be seated. The next case on the en banc court's docket is Brian Clay versus Judge Roy in Real Property Interest, State of Nevada, case number 62770. Are counsel ready to proceed? All right, Mr. Warren.
May it please the court, my name is Christopher Warren, along with Anthony Scrow and his associate Melinda Weaver. We represent Brian Clay in the court below and in this court. This court had issued a decision in 2013, the panel did, finding that a writ of mandamus should be issued based upon Judge Roy's determination that juvenile records could be released and openly inspected by the district attorney's office. Obviously, the rationale for doing so, or at least the state's rationale for wanting those records, was to utilize in Mr. Clay's upcoming capital trial. This was a violation of the statute. And quite frankly, as I break this particular case down, I really think it's already been decided by this court in 2004. In 2004, this court issued a published decision of Walker versus Nevada, which is at 120 Nevada 815. The substantial difference in Walker from the incident case is that Walker was dealing with an adult male. Apparently, he had been arrested for some serious drug offenses, and while doing the raid, officers noted that there were sealed records or something that appeared to be sealed. The state wanted the records unsealed because it appeared that the sealed records were from a case not dissimilar to what he was now facing. The state openly told this court that they wanted to use that information in his upcoming trial. So this court granted a writ of mandamus in that case, and as I look at the statute that this court considered in 2004 and the juvenile statute that we have here, they are virtually identical.
And so let me ask you one question. There's an indication that Clay conceded that pursuant to the statute they could be used in the penalty phase. Are you challenging just those issues that were done before the penalty phase and the guilt phase?
No, I'm challenging.
I'm a little confused.
You know, and that's an excellent question. It's something that I've looked at very carefully in this particular case because the state argues that there was a concession. I think the panel's decision is very accurate in this, in that there was some confusion in the juvenile court as to what exactly was going to be used. As the panel noted, there was another discussion about a statute where if the person was under 25, it could be utilized. There was an error, in my opinion, by any concession. As soon as we recognized that error, we began to object, and then we've come to this court. I think the concession is of no moment simply because the juvenile court at that time abused its discretion in releasing the information. Furthermore, any concession that was made was limited in purpose, although it shouldn't have been made. But it was limited in purpose, yet the district court judge just permitted the records to be given to the state and utilized in a penalty phase.
Is the transcript, you're looking at the transcript when you're discussing the breadth of what the concession was?
No, I'm trying to recall back in memory.
I see.
Justice Perry, I was present there. Ms. Weaver was also present. The state in their moving papers describes some statements made by Ms. Weaver, which they say are the concessions. I think at the time, as I recall back, but again, this is just a memory of a court date, that it was there was some discussion about how it would be utilized, and at that point these comments were made, but then we recognized that it was wrong under the statute, and that's why we began to object, especially to the judge's order. But in retrospect, what should have happened is, we believe on behalf of Mr. Clay, we should have made the type of arguments that we're making before this court right now, and we have consistently made before this court, that the district court was absolutely wrong. And furthermore, these arguments were made in pleadings in front of Judge Voy. As the panel noted, there was a retreat from that position, which should not have been done, I think, by both sides. And so as I looked at strict construction of the statute, I don't know how the district court could make such a ruling. Does that answer your question, Justice Breyer?
Mm-hmm. It does.
As I look at the two statutes, they appear to be identical. The plain reading of NRS 179.295, subsection 3, which was analyzed by this court in Walker, indicates that the court may permit a prosecuting attorney or defendant in a criminal action to inspect a sealed record for the purpose of obtaining information relating to co-defendants or other persons who are involved in the case that is the subject matter of the sealed record. And when I go over and look at our statute that this court is dealing with, it says a district attorney or an attorney representing a defendant in a criminal action may petition the juvenile court to permit the inspection of the sealed records to obtain information relating to the persons who were involved in the acts detailed in the records. They're identical. Those two statutes are identical. And so what causes me concern in this particular case is that in Walker, this court said you cannot utilize those records. You cannot unseal this matter to be utilized in a subsequent criminal case. He was an adult. We're dealing with juvenile records here. So what would have to happen, in my opinion, if the state was to prevail, this court would have to overturn Walker, which seems, Walker seems just on point and well-reasoned. It's good rationale. It's been the law in our state for at least a decade. We would have to ignore the legislative history because in the panel's decision, this court looked at the legislative history connected with the statute, finding that the statute had some ambiguity, and found the legislative history was fully on point with both Walker and the decision to withhold records from the district attorney's office to be utilized in a subsequent criminal case. We would have to decide, or this court would have to decide, that there should be less protection to juveniles than to adults. We would have to, again, the court would have to ignore the well-reasoned decision of the panel's earlier decision. And in my humble opinion, it would also become legislative in nature. And the reason I say that is because in Walker, this court said that on the plain meaning of that statute, the district attorney's office would not be permitted to have the information and then utilize it. Whereas in the panel's decision, the panel said there's ambiguity and therefore we need to look at the legislative history. Having evaluated the legislative history, the court, again, this court, ruled consistently with Walker. So I'm not...
But Walker was an impeachment. I mean, they wanted the evidence from the sealed records to impeach Mr. Walker in a federal trial, as I read it.
That's correct. They did mention that they wanted to do that.
Right, and the actual holding, the language of Walker, gives a little to both sides on that. It seems like its interpretation is limited to a declared use for impeachment purposes of the defendant in the guilt phase of the trial versus what your argument is, which is statutorily that stuff's off limits unless it relates to another person, not the defendant. And so to me, you know, Walker didn't do a lot of textual analysis. It just threw it out there that this was an impermissible use. So I'm not completely sold on the Walker argument and would like to have you explain to me why in the context of a panel the state's representation was, and it wasn't traversed, we're using that word a lot today, that they needed this to prepare for the penalty phase of the proceeding, and they wanted it sufficiently early to be able to locate witnesses and find out what might be relevant mitigation or evidence that might be forthcoming. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but could you address Walker more precisely than just saying it's on point and we should follow it?
I could, and I think I can directly show the court a portion of Walker that I think answers that question.
Okay, I have it here, so.
Okay, and so right, I'm at 822, so.
Okay, I am too.
822, and there's a portion where this court says, somewhat surprisingly, The state did not even suggest that its intent is to garner information on any person involved in Walker's original case, a purpose that may permit the inspection of a sealed criminal record under certain circumstances. And so as I look at that, Justice Pickering, what I thought this court was saying was that if you, originally the statute says that the parties can come in and look if you're maybe trying to figure out who a co-defendant is or something along those lines, but I think the state, you know, this court was criticizing the state for not even making such an argument, just basically saying we're going to utilize it in a subsequent criminal case. And that is specifically precluded by Walker. And I think that decision or the rationale enunciated in Walker is simply adopted by the panel's decision. Justice Pickering, I had requested 5 minutes for rebuttal. Have I answered your question?
You have. Thank you.
Thank you. If there's nothing further, I'd like to just keep 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, Mr. Oram.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Justice Hardesty, Chief Justice Hardesty, and members. I am Bridget Duffy. I'm the Chief of the Juvenile Division for the Clark County District Attorney's Office. And I would like to start by talking about why the request was made for these juvenile records. So we're starting with a case in April of 2012 where Mr. Clay accosted a woman while she was walking home, used two hands to choke her, threw her to the ground, put his hands down her pants and digitally penetrated her. 3 days later, on April 15th of 2012...
Counsel, let me stop you right there. We are very well aware of the crime, but we have the statute we're attempting to interpret and respond to. We just finished an argument where we were concerned about the assertion of passion into the argument. What we are looking at is the statutory text and how it affects what is before the court this day. I guess I start with the concern of the reading of the statutes, and the first thing that whether or not this should have even been gone into the request made because of the age of the defendant at the time of the request. And the applicability of the statute in light of the legislative history.
Justice Douglas, I would say, and it is pointed out in the panel decision, that at the time of the offense, Mr. Clay was 22 years of age. So 62H170 subsection C would not necessarily apply because he was over the age of 21. So that is what you are saying is a true statement. However, 62H170 subsection 2C would still apply. And what I'd like to do is talk about, I would also like to talk about the Walker
and why does it, why does it apply?
Well, so do you concede that subparagraph 3 is off the table in your argument?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Because he's over the age of 21.
So we don't need to debate that.
Correct. But Judge Voy, in his original decision, did cite to 62H172C as being the ability for both prosecution and defense to unseal those records. So that is cited, although it is mentioned in the supplemental briefing by petitioner that there was no statute cited as to what the we would be unsealing on. So going back into the Walker decision and looking at why the court in Walker in 2004 said they had that the plain meaning did not include the defendant, but only included co-defendants and other persons, I think what the court overlooked in Walker, what I would like this court to look at today when looking at 62H170, is the definition of persons, which was put into statute in 1985. Post-1971 legislative history, that's citing the co-defendant, as pointed out in the panel decision. So in 1985, Nevada revised statute 0.039 added the word persons to encompass all of the Nevada revised statute. And in doing that, it talked about that it had to be an all-encompassing, plain meaning of the word. And then this court in Cote decided that in determining the lewdness of a minor statute, in looking at whether or not that would apply to somebody over the age of, or under the age of 14, said when looking at the word person, you have to believe that it's all-encompassing and would include adults and juveniles. So the 1971 legislative history of the original 62H172C has now been wiped away by the definition of persons. And specifically, in that 1985 legislative history, the legislature said they went into each individual statute within the NLS and wiped out if it was a plain meaning, so each statute didn't refer to the word person. And instead, if you wanted it to be something different besides the plain meaning, they inserted that. So if the plain meaning of 62H172C is codependent, it should have said it. Just like this court decided in Cote, that if the plain meaning of the word person in the lewdness statute was not to include juveniles, the statute would have said it. So when you look now, knowing that legislative history, at 62H172C, you can see that the plain meaning of the word persons would include any person involved in that act. I would also go further to say, not that I'm saying that 62H173(3) applies to this case, but if you look at that, I think you could make an argument that records that are sealed, if the records relate to a person who is less than 21, could also include co-defendants, not just the defendant in the criminal action. I would also like to talk about the one of the issues that this court asked us to brief, which was whether or not we should even be here on a writ. And at this point, the state would say no, that the petitioner conceded the exact arguments that they are making now, that, in fact, I'm looking at the record on page 5 that says that, I'm sorry, I think it's page 9, page 7, lines 12 through 15, Ms. Weaver, our position is we haven't gotten to the penalty phase yet. If it gets to the penalty phase, they would be more than happy to inspect the records pursuant to the statute. They can do that. That's a concession. And that concession was recognized by three honorable members of this court already in the original panel decision. They conceded the argument. We have the right.
Counsel indicated, well, you heard his argument that was contrary to what you've just indicated. Why the confusion about the concession? He said we conceded nothing. We did object.
Well, they did object. They objected via writ to the Supreme Court. They conceded at the hearing. I don't know how there could be any doubt they conceded. They've said our position is we haven't gotten to the penalty phase. If it gets to the penalty phase, they would be more than happy to inspect the records. The only issue that remained was the timing. And my original, at the request of the criminal division, I would be the one that they call to ask about juvenile records, to file those motions, was we need it for investigative purposes.
So let me ask you this question, just as a follow-up. So was the district court, did the district court err in ordering a release of the records as opposed to an inspection pursuant to the statute?
I guess, Justice Perry, then you're getting down to the word release versus inspection. I think an argument could be made that we can do
it. It's an inspection. It didn't say release.
That's what the statute says, sort of inspection of the records.
Correct.
But he made his release very specific that it was to be destroyed, they were to be used, they were to be... So that is in of itself could be considered the same thing as an inspection. We're giving you the copies of them to look at and to inspect for their investigation. And as this honorable court knows, capital cases require a lot of investigation. The petitioners will investigate everything there is to investigate about this child. When he was a child, when he's an adult, and on and on and on, they will investigate everything. And so does the state have that right to investigate? And when talking about investigation purpose and not trial, we were clear, I was clear in that affidavit, this was for the purposes of investigation. this could come as early as the DA's office even trying to decide whether to seek the death penalty. So look at the factors. Juvenile records contain so much information. And in all honesty, I don't even know if anybody knows if there is a juvenile record. That sometimes happens too. We get requests because they're sealed or they're not visible to others.
So is that part of your argument is in the determination whether or not to seek the death penalty, there's information in the juvenile records that may be mitigating in nature, and you need to be aware when you're making that determination.
Absolutely. Juvenile records contain clinical assessments, psychological assessments, psychiatric assessments, family assessments. They contain everything. There could be assessments regarding what treatment or lack of treatment. You know, with our system, maybe no treatment. Maybe those probation officers never got them into treatment. Maybe that it's for, there's a clinical assessment that talks about their mental health needs or the history of the family that may be mitigating. And it's also important to know that this decision today, whatever this honorable court decides, is not just about capital cases. It's about all of our cases. It's about all of the access to juvenile records in all cases, cases where we're looking just for a life sentence. And in looking at the, even going into the legislative history of why the courts wanted access to those records, when Judge Mosley testified, it was because when an 18-year-old comes into court and says, this is my first offense, it's relevant to know that they've had 17 prior juvenile petitions and all the treatment. Did that drug treatment program work for them? Maybe not. Maybe they need something more significant. So all of those things are very relevant when deciding the next phase of a juvenile's life. And I want to address a little bit the amicus brief and talking about how we're treating juveniles different than adults. In that factor, I would say we really do, because we give juveniles 17 petitions of probation, because juvenile records automatically seal at 21. They didn't have to make an affirmative step to seal like an adult does. We give them that. At 21, their records are sealed. So to say that we want rehabilitation, I agree. The juvenile division of the DA's office wants kids to be rehabilitated. But to the point that they are not, and their records automatically sealed, and they may be relevant in determining the next phase of that person's life and public safety, we should be able to re-inspect those and allow the court to decide whether or not they're relevant. So just releasing these records to the district attorney's office or for inspection to determine what happens next at the penalty phase hearing, it would be used within 15 days of, we have to present our evidence of aggravation within 15 days, so our other matter evidence may include this person's juvenile records. Then the court decides whether or not that's relevant. The court makes that first determination before the jury sees it. So there's that extra added protection.
Which again raises the question about whether this writ should be considered at this time. A, we don't know if the records even exist. B, we're not clear whether the records would be used by the court during the course of the proceedings. C, the purposes of the records are pretty broad at this point, and how they would be tailored would be shaped by the direction of the trial, all of which causes me some concern about whether the writ should be entertained by the court now. Is there some compelling interest in the juvenile delinquency area that needs guidance on the record determinations?
Well, Chief
from
Justice,
this decision.
Well, from this decision, you know, respectfully, I would hope that this honorable court would find that 62H172C allows inspection by the district attorney's office or the attorney for the defendant for investigative purposes.
I guess I didn't articulate the question quite the way I wanted. Post-Walker, is there some lack of clarity among juvenile judges in the state over how to approach unsealing juvenile records?
Well, Justice Hardesty, you know that I do sit on your Juvenile Justice Commission. So I, and we have a record-sealing subcommittee to address these types of issues. And in candor to the court, that subcommittee kind of stopped after the panel decision came out, because if the panel decision was to remain to stand, then I was going to seek intensive legislative changes to this statute. However, I don't think they're needed, because I think the plain definition of persons was added to the NRS in 1985, and I think we're reaching too far back to 1971, when in 1971, the kids had to petition the court. The DA's office got notice of what was happening. We got to come in and present evidence if the record should be sealed, if they were rehabilitated.
I guess the other thing that concerns me about entertaining this writ is when a now adult concedes the use of the records if there's a death penalty hearing in this case. Is this the right case to be addressing this legal question, especially after the panel decision? I just don't know if this is an appropriate case for the court to be revisiting Walker, extending Walker, clarifying Walker, or whatever the court might choose to do.
Well, I think Justice
Harris would be issuing an advisory opinion, I guess, is the bottom line.
The arguments were conceded. The easy answer, the arguments were conceded. There is no argument. They admitted we had the right to inspect those records, and then they took that entire issue up on a writ and said that Judge Boyd was arbitrary on what they conceded. And
I think that was part of our order granting the reconsideration and directing a supplemental briefing as to whether or not it was appropriate to entertain this writ.
Okay, and my answer to that is no, it's not appropriate, unless you want to address the timing issue of when to release. Any other questions?
Yes.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. The other basis upon which a writ can be considered, notwithstanding the argument that you've just made, is whether or not this would allow for more clarity or more specific consistent enforcement among the jurisdictions. I'm not sure I heard the answer to that. Do you think that we need to reach it with that in mind? And it's probably a difficult question for you because there's only one GB judge here in Clark County.
Right. I think that's a statewide question. I think in Clark, our juvenile judge believes that 62HC 170 applies to release record for inspection to the district attorney's office for not only a co-defendant or other persons, but for the defendant, him or herself. It's also used for witnesses in criminal cases. We often get motions to unseal a witness's juvenile record to use against them in criminal cases. And so that's the attorney for the defendant in a criminal case motions to unseal a juvenile record for a person related in the acts would be the victim, the alleged victim in the criminal case.
So your response is that you believe it's being applied or interpreted consistently, at least within the 8th Judicial District Court?
I do.
Thank you, Ms. Duffy. Thank you, Chief.
Okay, any other questions? All right, Ms. Duffy, thank you. Mr. Oram?
Mr. Oram, I'd like you to, if you would, on your way up, I'll save you some time, address the question that I just posed to Ms. Duffy, and that is whether or not you believe that this rule, the statute is being applied, interpreted properly and consistently within the 8th Judicial District, because as you can see, there's some concern on this court or by this court of whether or not we should even entertain the writ at this time. I think the concession is a weighty concern. But having said that, there is the other reason upon which this court could act to consider a writ. What say you with respect to that?
What I would say, Your Honor, is that is it being applied across the board? No, of course not, because if it was being applied as it was determined in Walker, we wouldn't be here. It was applied away from what? What I've just heard the prosecution argue is that Judge Roy is interpreting it completely different than Walker. At least that's what I've just heard. And I was, Justice Perry, I went back and looked at some of the transcripts. I didn't make many statements during the hearing in front of Judge Roy, but I did say, and did I answer your question?
You did, sir.
Okay.
Yes.
And so I would think that perhaps what the state could do is put it back on sometime during the trial so that they would be given an opportunity to address it prior to the penalty phase. The court says, what harm would be in releasing it now, knowing that it can't be used in any fashion at that point, other than potentially looking at witnesses for the penalty phase? I reply, this is page 9. What I would suggest is that he hasn't been found guilty, so there's no point in looking at it for sentencing until that occurs. So it sounds like I am objecting. I'm objecting all along. I don't really understand their policy argument here, that basically policy dictates something different than the statute. You know, we're not dealing as legislators. This is the statute. The statute says it cannot be released to be used in a subsequent criminal case. And that's exactly what they're asking take place in this particular case. Also, what causes me concern, really of concern, is if we do nothing, if nothing happens, if the writ is not issued, I see, when I was looking through the state's briefs, I thought, that doesn't make much sense. What they're asking is that, let's look at the juvenile records. Maybe we'll use it in the penalty phase. And if he is, unfortunately, from our point of view, sentenced to death, we'll be back up here saying, we objected, we will file motions below, and then we'll object in a timely fashion. Now we'll be saying, overturn a capital case because of this error, and then the court, if there is error found, will look at harmless error. And I think, what a waste of judicial resources. What a terrible waste of judicial resources.
You know, Mr. Rome, aggravation is statutory, but mitigation isn't. And what Ms. Duffy raised about mitigation, having been in the trenches all my life on capital murder cases, my God, if I were still trying capital murder cases, I sure would like to look at juvenile records for mitigation purposes.
Well,
when I was on the district court bench, it was my colleague, Justice Sabin, who said, look at how many people we sentenced who were in foster care. And finally I said, oh, my God, you're right, Judge Sadie, you're absolutely right. And I think there's some valuable information there for you.
Well, and we get to have it. It says a district attorney or an attorney representing the defendant. So that's me on behalf of Mr. Klein, a criminal action, may petition the juvenile court to permit the inspection of the sealed records to obtain information relating to the persons who were involved in the acts detailed in the record. So I would think I could look at that. I don't think the statute would stop me from looking at it, but I don't think that statute...
Well, wait a minute. How can that be on a true textual reading of that statute? You get to look at it and the other side doesn't, but the wording of the statute is the same. Your alternative viewers, the state or the defense.
What our difficulty
I
is...
I think that's Justice Jerry's point.
I think what I perceive as substantially different here is the Walker decision where the state is indicating that they are using it for the purpose of attacking a defendant in a subsequent criminal case. That is the problem, and the state is doing the exact same thing that was rejected in Walker. And that
so
is,
you're saying Walker is policy-driven, not textually driven?
No, I think Walker is right on the statute, that you cannot use it in a subsequent criminal case. And that's the legislative intent.
Well, then how can you use it either?
Well,
the statute says a district attorney or an attorney representing the defendant petitions, etc. How do you get it if Walker stands?
Well, if Walker stands, what I could do is I could go in under 62H.1702C, and for the very limited purpose, I could ask the juvenile court to permit the juvenile court to inspect the records of Mr. Clay, because I'm an attorney representing him. Now, I couldn't use it. I don't think I could necessarily use that information. However, I would be able to utilize that statute. And so I think the problem was addressed in Walker that's identical to the issue here is the state plans on obtaining these juvenile records and then utilizing them for subsequent...
And doesn't that kind of prove the point that it would have been... that it may be imprudent for us to entertain this on a writ when it's not fully vetted in the district court? And I hearken back to some of the comments that the Chief made addressing the state, and I'd like to hear your views on that if I can have a few moments.
Why should the court issue...
Given the concession, and I appreciate what you quoted to us from page 9 of the record of your comments, but given that concession and given how incompletely developed this was at best for you in the district court, why should we entertain this issue on a petition for writ relief?
Well, because the judge's order, Judge Foy's order, was a manifest abuse of discretion. It was found by the panel, and I would agree with that.
No, I know you agree with the panel. Of course you do.
And so, you know, Justice Pickering, what I was saying in context to that is I'm here and there are seven justices up there because they're a lot smarter than me. They're a lot smarter. Yes, I think that's true. And so when I see a panel decision come out like this and I see Walker, that for me to try to articulate something better, I think is very flawed. And so my opinion is I read this court's decisions and a lot of times I just have, you know, honor the court's decisions because I recognize the mind.
It's stare decisis is what you're arguing, yeah.
And good minds, better than mine. So I can't argue it any better than the panel argued it, or excuse me, that the panel decided and Walker decided. I'm really just regurgitating what the court's rulings have been for a decade. And that's what I think is the importance of it. Furthermore, I think for judicial economy, this could have a spiraling effect that maybe not seen. Maybe we're looking at the cases as a whole. I look at my case and think, my goodness, this is a real problem. And so I thought the panel's decision was excellent, and it's right on point with Walker. Have I answered your question?
You have. The only lingering question I have is, if we denied the writ, and you would go back to the court and you could re-raise the argument that you conceded on a motion to reconsider or what have you, and maybe we would get to a better record.
That's a correct statement. Of course, if the court doesn't issue the writ, of course we would object below so that we don't have an argument. I look at it a long way down the road.
Right. Yeah.
There's no chance we're going to come up here and Brian Clay, in the event he's been convicted or something bad has happened to Mr. Clay.
Yeah.
They're going to say they're not going to be able to say we didn't object. We're going to object. So obviously we would do that. But I think it's sort of a roundabout way of just stopping what's happened. And I do think that the panel's decision was excellent, and it delivers to all the judges notice that this is a strict interpretation of the statute. Look at Walker, look at this decision, and from now on, just carry the statute out and interpret it in that regard.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, counsel, for your arguments and briefs today. The matter will stand submitted, and we appreciate